Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
What's good, internet? It is Monday, October 2nd, and you are listening to Waypoint Radio, episode 101. Finally, this is Waypoint 101. It's happened. We finally did it. I know we've been promising an episode of Waypoint 101 for a while. We are going to get to that soon, hopefully. I believe the plan is to be able to get through that Waypoint 101 of Wolfenstein, the New Order, before the release. A new order. Not just any new order.
Let's be bold here. The ships on the shore. Let's tear down the bridges. We were saying we were going to do this. We were going to at least record something this week.
Yeah, we're about the first half of Wolfenstein: The New Order. I think we can do it. I put in some time. I've been working on it in the background this whole time. It's October. It's time to move on this. That game comes out on the 27th. So here's what I'll say. I say that we should aim to have the first episode released next week, and then we'll have the second episode of that released in the week of the 27th, or like for the 25th or something, like a couple days before the 27th. So get in questions this week. Send questions to gamingadvice.com. I just realized I fucked up this morning and unsubscribed to gamingadvice.com. I have to make an email to make sure I can see those emails.
Cutting a little hole at the bottom of the old question bucket.
That's not what I meant to do. So sometimes people email you spam. Like, that's a thing that happens. You get spam emails. And so the thing that happens on Google is you can hit, like, mark as spam. And then it gives you the option and says, oh, if this is spam, do you want to unsubscribe to it? And I'm like, yeah, sure. And then it pops up a thing that's like, we'll figure it out. Like, don't even worry about it. We'll figure out how to unsubscribe. And I was like, all right, cool. And then I got an email 2 seconds later. It was like, you've been unsubscribed from gamingadvice.com. Like, fuck no. That's not what I meant. Ugh. Anyway, I'm Austin Walker. Joining me, you've heard the voices already, of Danielle Riendo.
Hey, hey.
Patrick Klepek.
Hello.
And Rob Zachney.
Hi, everybody.
We are a little dour today. I think that is only fair, given the news that's coming out of Las Vegas. Last night, there was a terrible mass shooting. 50 dead. 58. It's up to 58. Jesus.
500 wounded
Christ.
Now.
Christ.
500 wounded now. It's the worst mass shooting in American history, which is saying something, because we are barely a year past the Pulse shooting, in which around 50 people were killed and another 50 were injured. This has been a recurring tragedy in our lifetimes, especially. The number of mass shootings have gone up as we've kind of entered maturity, and it feels like it's something that punctuates seasons, and it's the worst. If any of you were part of this shooting, if anyone's family was injured, if anyone had friends who were injured, obviously you are completely in our thoughts, and I hope that you are giving yourself space and time. But also, if you're in the world today, you were affected by this in some way. Obviously, some more than others. I'm not trying to take away from those who were directly impacted, but we live in a world in which no matter where you are in the world, violence is a reality. There is not a place that is fully safe from violence. Here in America, our problem with guns and gun violence are substantial. And in moments like this, what I do my best to remember is that though they are substantial, and though they seem on our worst days almost inevitable, what am I going to wake up to today? What terrible action, what single person, what duo will walk out with a pair of assault rifles and hurt lots of people? It feels impossible to adjust and impossible to address. It is also material. It is also real. It is the result of real material things, ranging from policy to trade law to local policing to what's happening in a business. Like, there are so many places at which we can try to work out solutions. And on days like today, I think it actually is good self-care to kind of let yourself disengage a little bit if you need to. But there are also moments like this where we can find ourselves catalyzed and get the energy we need to do more than offer thoughts and prayers and to do more than kind of wallow in our own sadness, which feels really good right now, frankly. But it's important to then take that second step, which is to say, because this is a material thing, because this is a thing that happens, this is not a freak thunderstorm even, right? This isn't the devil, right? Like, this is a person did this with things, with weapons that got into his hands somehow. We can figure out how to address that. And like that, for me, recognizing that and then recognizing that we are culpable if we do nothing is what the first step has to be. So that is my little 2-minute word on that. How's everyone else feeling this morning? Not great.
Yeah.
Not great.
I think it was I went to bed at what I thought was like a...
Yep.
Fairly late for a Sunday night, like 10:30. Watch the end of the Sunday night football game, and
wait,
then...
that's a late night for you these days.
Oh hell yeah, man!
Man,
oh,
you're living clean.
If you don't know if you're going to be woken up at 5:30 in the morning, then you got to plan for that in advance. So, I play a lot of games early in the morning. Now is actually the what is happening to me.
You're turning into Brad Shoemaker.
I wish I was actually Brad, who wakes up comfortably without an alarm clock between like 5 and 6 a.m.
Oh,
like,
my God.
I wish I could flip the switch to that. I'm slowly moving in that direction. Like, I can't, even if my wife lets me sleep, I can't make it past 7:15.
Wow.
Like, my clock just does not. Doesn't matter if I've been drinking.
The dream.
Yeah. Doesn't matter if I was up late. Doesn't matter if
That makes it all sound worse, though.
Yeah,
the idea
it actually
that you
does.
Couldn't sleep even if you needed it like that is
well, it gets
brutal.
It makes you get your drinking and like there are a lot of like things that like you take into account when you realize this is how your body is adjusting. But this is all to say, like waking up this morning to like old New York Times alerts that were like I was like, oh, like a lot of it must have happened last night. Like a bunch of things happened, and instead it was just like. Oh, there was a shooting.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, there was a shooting, and the person's been found killed. Oh, there's been a shooting, and 50 people are dead. Like, the progressiveness discovering that overnight was truly something. Because I made it hard to process because I was just like, wait, what are we talking? How could. I went to bed. Like, I just woke up. Like, things haven't happened yet. Like, we all slept last night.
Right.
I mean, so I'm back out in Western Mass, house sitting for someone, and just. I wanted to get out of the city and enjoy autumn in New England because I'm all about that life.
Yep.
And also drinking ill-advised beers, you know.
Also all about that life. Yeah.
Uh-huh. Yeah. But I had this feeling this morning and like not to – I hate the way this sounds all me. But I was having a pretty terrific morning. It was the first really cold morning I've had this year where it was like – you know, 35 degrees when I woke up, and I was out there, you know, walking through the woods, and there was, like, a low mist, and it was perfect. Like, if, you know, the Headless Horseman had come pursuing Ichabod Crane through that path, I would not have been surprised. I've been like, yeah, it is about that time of year. Go get him, Headless Horseman. And so it was a perfect morning, and I was feeling great about life and my job and work and my place in the world. And then you open up the news, because you can do that. You can, you turn on your computer and you're inundated with news. And immediately, like, all of that burned away like morning mist.
Right.
And I think part of it is just, in addition to the individualized tragedies and problems that we find a lot when we see the news, it does, I can't remember a period in my life, with maybe the exception of the days immediately after 9/11, where crisis was so inescapable that, like, doing everything, having a moment of happiness or just peace or contentment, also always just seemed like there's this juxtaposition that would consistently happen. And I think that's the exhausting thing about these times is that it always feels like you can't get space to have an awareness that's not dominated by a looming tragedy or an ongoing tragedy.
Yeah.
Yep.
And that's, you know, there's people with real hurt and real loss, and I like, and my thoughts are with them, and I know that this, like, this petty grievance doesn't even rate, but just looking at the macro scale of this era, it does kind of feel like it's inescapable these days in a way that's really uniquely draining in my experience.
Yeah. I woke up this morning, before I even heard about the shooting, I woke up to some bad news about a family death, which was upsetting. Yeah, and then, sucks. So I called my mom and I heard about it, and then I was like, God, Christ. And then I went on Twitter and I was like, I don't want to make light whatsoever of this, but it's one of those moments where it's like, completely what you're saying, Rob, like it's just completely inescapable to just be in this world where this is happening and acts of terror like this are just like commonplace now.
It's a good illustration, Danielle, God, that like life continues also, like life is already hard, yeah, often, you know,
yeah.
Like life is already has its own shit going on, like so for this to be on top of everything else can be really draining. And I don't know, like, I definitely give yourself the time to grieve, give yourself the time to be in a shitty mood. Like, I've said it before on this podcast, but I really believe feeling bad is underrated in this country.
It's okay to be mad.
It is okay to be frustrated and sad. It is okay to be despondent for brief periods of time. Like, that is not, you know, the way I always tell friends about it is, like, it's okay to beat yourself up. Just don't beat yourself up for beating yourself up. Like, don't spiral down that fucking hellhole of like, I can't believe I felt bad today on the day of America's worst mass shooting. I didn't get anything done. Like, dog, that's okay. It's okay that you didn't get a lot done today. Like, give yourself that room. Let yourself breathe. And then, if this is something you really care about, then you have to take that second step and figure out ways to become involved. So,
100%. And the other thing. The other thing I will say always in these tragedies, and it's one of the reasons I became an EMT, and it's the most I know kind of thing, but like the Mr. Rogers thing of always sort of watch the helpers and like watch for the first responders and watch for people who are trying to be human amidst a tragedy and try to help other people amidst a tragedy. That is the only place I find comfort in these things. Yeah. And I know it's corny to say, but it is true. It is one of those things where it's like, sometimes you need that. Sometimes you need to see that element of humanity and that element of people doing their goddamn best to save lives. And that's the only place I can take comfort ever in these events. So,
You know, I think obviously we did not do a battleground stream today, and I think that it's like, it's always tough for us in moments like this. The Pulse shooting happened during E3, right? Like the first day of
E3. That's right, it did.
Like this stuff keeps happening in America, in the world. Bad things are going to keep happening, and it's weird to sometimes cover video games or even to seek refuge in them when it's like, all right, gonna fire up Battlegrounds. Like, no, I'm actually good, Battlegrounds. Like, I'm actually okay. I kind of don't want to think about like shooting with like precision-based, you know, sound dynamics. Weird is like, this is one of those things
that... Shot that dude in the back of the head.
Right. Not exactly a fun place to be.
It gets you to confront in a comfortable way that the glorification of violence in video games in a way that we're able to distance ourselves
so easy
often from. And I don't, there are no easy answers to that question. Like, the answer to that is not immediately, like, take guns out of video games. Less violence. Right. I mean, I'm playing through wonderful games like SteamWorld Dig 2 and Golf Story. There are options in which like violence is a low metric on the mechanical interaction with the game, but it also makes you feel weird when you then sit and go, the game I've spent 120 hours in, the game I've spent the most time with this year is a game in which like I have an intimate connection and appreciation and love of violence in a way that. Yeah.
The other thing that's been interesting to me is, like, you know how Twitter has kind of rolled out lots of ways in which it stops your tweets from appearing linearly in your feed? I've seen lots
of tweets. Get that tweet deck. Get that TweetDeck.
I have TweetDeck on my phone.
Stop
I don't like TweetDeck. I told you that. I can't use TweetDeck. It doesn't. The thing it doesn't do.
It's worth it to not have Twitter fuck with your shit.
I need to know. I need to know if people reply to something, so I can know whether or not I need to click through a tweet to see if there's responses. Anyway, the thing that I think is interesting is that, like, I woke up this morning, and my feed was a combination of news updates about the shooting, and then lots of people randomly, just like from last night, from 8 hours ago, from 17 hours ago, sharing kills that they got in Battleground. Yeah. So it was like Brennan Keough being like, look at these great collection of vehicle kills I got today, or just like shit like that. And it's like, ooh, like, and of course it's not a thing he would tweet in the middle of this. Do you know what I mean? Like, he wouldn't tweet, then got two kills in the military base, I went on to get this one into top 10, would have got it in one shot if I remembered what side of the steering wheel was on. Like, no, he wouldn't have tweeted that in the middle of a mass shooting. But Twitter doesn't know that. The algorithm doesn't put those, the algorithm can't read this video and see that he got this really great headshot. Like, and that's not a thing I actually want to see this morning. Like, it's really interesting to see that stuff. Just to it foregrounds the way we talk very nonchalantly, very mechanically about what is like representations of violence. So
yeah, but like, on the other hand, I mean, the one thing, like, I'm totally on board with being sensitive to this stuff as these events are recent, and like that people are obviously going to be especially heightened to their reactions to depictions of violence, and I totally understand that. When we talk about like the broader cultural conversation about, like, you know, uniquely American violence, I hesitate before ceding. I don't look, this isn't a completed thought. It's not something I've like decided for myself, but like, I'm not entirely sure I want to cede the notion that like people goofing off in battlegrounds in this cartoon version of like the most dangerous game is a significant part of the continuum that leads to, you know,
that's not the argument
a violent
I'm making,
man.
The argument. The argument that I'm making is that I think that it is, a compelling topic to work through the ways in which we generally think about gun violence, and that for us, we are part of a smaller demographic of the world that regularly interacts with gun violence in this way, that is representations of gun violence that are direct and that are engaged with the, like, the mechanical sweetness, the aesthetic pleasure of the sound of guns going off. I think that is a distinct part of what our culture as the gaming community is, because the guns are in so many things. Like, we will sit here all day talking about how good the guns in Destiny and Battlegrounds feel, like, and compare those to the guns in other games where the handling isn't good. Like, we have those conversations just as easily as we talk about jumping in Mario versus in Donkey Kong Country versus in Super Ghouls and Ghosts. Like, we talk about these things without any broader context. And I'm not, this isn't an appeal to start saying, like, now remember, just because this AK-47 handles good doesn't mean that we shouldn't remember the AK-47 was developed. You know, like, that's not the case I'm making. But I do think phenomenologically it is an important thing to remember about us as a subgroup, and it is something that I want there to be more thoughtfulness and inquiry about. Is like, not the direct, I'm not making a direct cause, I'm not even making a correlative argument about the way we talk about guns to gun violence, but I am saying that, like, when I talk to my parents who go and see movies and with action in them, right, who go and who watch TV shows where people get shot, they're rarely like, with exception, they're rarely like, the guns in this movie are dope. Like, it's just like, oh yeah, it's a good movie, it's a good action movie. No, like, every now and then it's like, yo, that shotgun with the silencer on it from No Country for Old Men, that thing seemed terrifying, right? Like, you get those moments where something breaks through, or like, oh, the Blade Runner pistol is really memorable. But you don't get like, I really love the car 98K. You know, like, that is a distinctly us fucking thing. And it's just something I'm thinking about a lot today because of what the day is. So,
and there's a lot of correlation between power and the way we think about power. And certain somewhat, I won't say this is only a masculine phenomenon, but a certain association with masculinity, power, and firearms that is definitely a sort of American or Western, pretty much American. Yeah, I think it's okay to say American is such a part of the sort of American mythos that is worth examining as well, I think.
Yeah, I definitely think that there's something there of like, not only masculine, right, but like the association, it's a it it echoes in on itself, right? So like
it's the cowboy thing, you know, right, it's the cowboy thing. It's definitely the cowboy sort of image.
But it's like one of those double, it works in on itself because it's like, okay, what is powerful? Men, what do men associate with? Guns and phallic things. Okay, so that means that's what power looks like. And so then guns become powerful, besides the fact that they're already powerful because they can like hurt people and take lives. There is a broader mythologizing, I guess, around guns as like as powerful as you can get.
Fetishizing?
Yes. There's definitely a fetishization. But I think that's maybe like here's the counter argument about games is games are often really good about giving you non-gun things too, in terms of what feels powerful. I think about something like Titanfall, which is obviously a game filled with guns and giant robots that have guns. But one of the most powerful things you can do in Titanfall is like jump from wall to wall. Or like, you know, slide down a hill. Like those things actually also feel really powerful and make you feel really like competent. With Destiny, like obviously the gun handling is really good. Also cool is how I can double jump and fly and stuff. What class do you play?
What class do you play? A warlock.
Well, there's your problem.
Yeah, we've had this exact conversation in the past in which it's not excusable that a game has you could describe saying, shitty jumping to one third of the classes of the game.
The hunter and the titan jumps are really good. I actually really do now that I've spent some time with the warlock and like wrap my head around the warlock jump. It's really cool because it does something that none of the other classes do, which is like will prevent you from a fall if you totally fuck up. And you haven't already wasted your full jump because you can just like hit it and be like, no, I'm good. I'm going to glide all the way down. Whereas the Titan one will fuck you up.
One thing someone mentioned this aside from something I mentioned on Friday about wanting a second class, but not wanting to spend the time to get to 280. I guess when you start a second character in Destiny 2, it takes into account the height of the like loot drops that you've had.
Oh, really? Yeah.
System wide. So once you've if you just drill past the campaign, as fast get as to possible, 20. You can get to essentially like 260 within an hour or two because the drops you're going to be getting are associated with your highest level character, not with the character that you're playing at the moment.
So that's a really good quality.
It's still
of life
that's still
fix.
Not like what I want, but I think that in terms of like. I just want to be able to pay $20 and have a character 280 and not spend 6 hours doing that. But that's a lot faster than I would have thought.
Definitely. Have people been playing other games this weekend? Have people been like getting some rest from like coincidentally, hopefully, maybe not playing games that are just I'm going to shoot some people?
Yeah.
Austin, you vibing. We hit the links.
We did hit the links. I wish this game had multiplayer so bad. I wish every game. That's the thing I've left at right now is like I wish a lot of these games that are not built for multiplayer in any way still had multiplayer. We've both been playing Golf Story, which is like so charming. Like I want to reach over and grab it right now. It's right here. I could pick it up. It's on my Switch, which already makes it good. You talked about this a little bit last week, right, Patrick?
I'm not sure if we talked about it on the podcast.
You wrote about it. Okay.
But it's you know, I think the shorthand pitch of this, which is both true and not true of this game, is that imagine if Earthbound swapped JRPG battles for a golf club. Like that is the sort of vibe that the game is going for. It's definitely the aesthetic and humor that it's riffing on. It's like he plays this young kid who the tutorials that he plays with his father, and that kind of gives you the basics of how to swing the golf club. Mm-hmm. And then it swaps to like 20 years later, and he feels a desire to go back to the golf course.
Breaks up with his girlfriend at the top.
Yeah, there's this funny / tragic phone call at the very beginning in which his girlfriend berates him for, rightly so, on
yes,
the girlfriend's
she's
side.
Right.
Not coming over and getting the rest of his boxes from her place. And he says, I just had to move back home. I had to go to the course. And there's a reference to something called The Incident.
The Incident.
Seems to like imply that his father had passed or something. Yeah. Maybe it's something quirkier than that. It's not exactly clear what like the tone of this game will end up going for in that direction. But anyway, it's a justification for you to start hitting some local golf courses. It's just the aesthetic I think is sort of forgettable. It sort of tries I know people compare it to Stardew Valley, but Stardew Valley has way more character. There's pixel art and the pixel art is well made, but it doesn't have a defining character or style that makes Golf Story scream Golf Story in the way that Stardew Valley screams Stardew Valley, well, and other good pixel art games do that.
Which is a shame because the actual setup and a lot of the places you're going to are built for really good art. I think the art, again, the art is passable. It's fine. But the fact that I couldn't tell you what, like, the chief of the, or not the chief, but like the head person, whatever, any of the characters from the caveman golf course look like is a problem. Like, the second golf course you go to is just a bunch of, like, Neanderthals or whatever, like cave prehistoric people who run a golf course, and like there's nothing wrong with them. They just run a golf course. You dig for fossils. There's a lot of sand traps. There's lots of sand traps. There's tar pits that you can fall, that your ball can fall into. Like, it's a fun, goofy game of golf in that way. Like, it is very like Earthbound is a really good touchstone. Obviously, because Earthbound is, so is Undertale. Like, imagine Undertale, but instead of doing the mini games to fight, you did golf stuff.
Yeah.
And it's a really good mix of, like, long-form content, like, I'm going to go play through 9 holes of this golf course, and also little short-form challenges, which make it a really great fit for the Switch, because it's like, all right, just, you know, you're gonna have to hit from every bunker on this hole or in this course to try to get it onto the green. Like, that's what your challenge will be. Or, like, just hit all of the, like, here's a hot tip for everybody. Patrick, I don't know if you've done this one yet, but there are washing machines out on the driving range of the first course that you go to, and if you hit those, you just get XP. I'll just hang out by the driving range and hit all the washing machines. Like,
there's a character that makes a reference in the soda room,
yep,
which would be the bar at a normal golf course. It makes a reference to the line is basically like, I hit a washing machine today over at the driving range, and it made me feel good. I definitely meant to do that. And so I guess that I didn't realize that game
that
was actually hinting for you to go do
that.
Yeah,
so I was like, I'll go try that and see what happens. And I went and, like, got XP for it. So I was like, cool. Good job, game. Like, it has lots of character in that way. The writing is pretty funny. It's Australian, which means they say mate a whole bunch. And also there's like occasionally some slang that I've just never heard before in my life. People keep saying you got sucked in, and I don't know what that means. We're like, someone will say something, like someone will diss somebody else, and someone else will be like, oh, you got sucked in. And like, what's that mean? Am I allowed to say that? Like, it's been a blast so far. Like, I really just want to keep putting time into it. I wish the putting was a little bit better. It doesn't have it doesn't show the slope. There's just a meter at the top right that says,
yeah,
like,
it doesn't make the slope relative to the position of the course. Like the way slope is conveyed in most golf games these days are 3D, so slope is relative to the direction of the player. So it's like, oh, when it says like the slope is slightly to the left, like, that makes a lot of sense because you're facing forward at the hole. And this game doesn't, because it's overhead in 2D, like, it's more, I mean, their solution is just to make it a fixed, it's just to make it a fixed plane. So it's just like, hey, by the way, it always slopes in this direction.
But
it just
makes
it a little, it's not really intuitive.
It doesn't have, like, the thing that I loved about, like, the Mario Golf on the Game Boy Color was, like, when you putt, it has just those little triangles or arrows that kind of point out at different sizes to show you how heavy the slope is in various directions. And, like, this is just, like, it's a green, and then there's a thing in the top right, an icon that just says slope left, you know, slight left, or whatever. And I just want it to be, this is a quibble with what is otherwise, I think, like, a really fantastic $15 Switch game. So that has been a little bit of joy for me this weekend, for sure.
I wish that it switched to a behind the character perspective when you were doing, like, this is my dream for Golf Story 2, is that when you get into chipping and putting range, that it then goes to like a Mario Golf, like, behind the character, so then it would be able to better display the, like, relativeness of, like, your slopes and stuff like that. I think that would be a really cool way to handle that if they get around to doing a sequel.
I want them to get money to make an everyday everybody golfs style, like, 3D version of this, and like, because I want to be in these courses. Like, I want to go to the caveman golf course and see the giant dinosaur skeletons for my own, but still have all the charm and the RPG stuff.
Yeah, the golf part of Everybody's Golf is better than the golf part of Golf Story. The golf part of Golf Story is fine. Like, it's enjoyable, and I'm But everybody's golf, like, but probably by nature of that being an evolution of the Hot Shots Golf series, like, there's just so much, like, they've just refined the way that feel, like, the actual hitting of the button to time your shots in Golf Story just never, it just doesn't feel 100% right to me. Yeah. And the way that when I was playing Everybody's Golf, it just feels, when you miss it, you know you missed it, and you don't beat yourself up about it, because, or you do beat yourself up because it feels like it's your fault. And Golf Story just feels a little bit off. But we're at, like, I want, like, a perfect merger of the two, which is what I hope that Golf Story 2 ends up becoming. Like, even though I'm enjoying Golf Story a lot, like, it's one of those games that you play and immediately go, ah, like, I see what they could do with more time and resources. Because I like the golfing part of Everybody's Golf more than Golf Story, but I love the meta, like, story world elements of Golf Story way more than the shitty, like, Everybody's Golf just, like, barely even tries to incorporate, like, larger meta elements. And as someone that wants both of those, like, fused together, like, hopefully they're able to get around with that in the second game.
Totally.
I have
Danielle,
to say,
sorry, are you trying
no,
to...
no, it's okay.
I've heard you try to get into this conversation four times, and I didn't let you, because I'm so excited about
golf.
I'm just so excited.
Well, I'm excited to play this game, because my girlfriend's also playing it, but I was thinking as we're talking about it, golf is, like, the opposite for me of every other sport, in that it's the one sport I much prefer in video games than in real life.
Oh, really?
I, like, couldn't care less about real golf, but unlike everything else, I'm, like, super... I really enjoy good golf mechanics in games. Something about it just kind of works.
That's, I think that's largely speaks to, like, it's very difficult to play golf as, like, a newcomer. Like, you can pick up a basketball and, like, throw around the hoop. And, like, you might not be good, but, like, you can have some fun.
You'll,
like,
get it a little bit. Yeah.
Yeah, golf is not fun if, like, you can't swing properly. Like, it's just not fun. Right. So I totally understand where you're coming from. I think that's why golf games are often as popular as they are. I would guess the split on, especially something like Golf Story that is not, like, a, you know, well, it's not Tiger Woods. What are they calling the
what are these games?
Sims
is it just PGA Tour?
Oh, okay.
I don't think they tied a new athlete to it. I think it's just...
Yeah, it's just generic or something.
Just golf. Yeah.
But my guess is that a lot of the people that play that actually play golf. And my guess is the ratio on Golf Story is going to be a lot more people that don't play golf, but like the idea of golf.
Yeah.
And Golf Story allows them to express that.
Yeah, I think that sounds right to me. And I was going to say, the game that I've been playing is also a sports game that's not really about the sport, necessarily.
What is it?
But it is a game called Butterfly Soup, and here's the description. It's a visual novel, but I just want to give you the one-line description at the very top of the itch.io page here. A game about gay Asian girls playing baseball and falling in love,
true,
which is wonderful.
Good.
The feature set, I'm just going to read this as well.
Please.
The feature set. Features. Bullet point one, Harold, they're lesbians, with an asterisk that says, except not really, one of them is bi.
Good.
Bullet
Great.
Point two, 3 to 4 hours long. Bullet point three, memes. It is like this wonderful, charming visual novel starring sort of four young Asian American girls. They're teenagers who are part of a baseball club. It's the most East Bay ass game I've ever played ever. They say hella, they drink bubble tea. They have a lot of really wonderful little touches that are I'm obviously not Asian American, but I know them to be Asian American touches. They talk a lot about sort of Asian American parenting styles and sort of what the high school experience is like for Asian American folks. And the sort of the slang and the lingo is all absolutely super, super East Bay, super, super like Asian American young person in the East Bay. You know, they go to A's games and it's like the best thing in the world when they go to athletics games. It's really charming,
the
really,
art looks really,
really well
good.
Written.
These characters look really well designed.
The art is fantastic. And it's really funny. It's genuinely laugh out loud funny at parts. I don't want to spoil anything, but there's one scene that uses a very special recording of the Titanic love theme that is just really the best use of that song ever. I don't want to say too much about it because it's definitely the kind of thing where you experience it. It's a visual novel, so it's very much, you know, you're sort of experiencing a bit of linear story basically. Right.
Is that just is that on Itch?
It's on Itch. It's free, but you know, definitely you can support the author if you want to.
Like, name your price or whatever.
Yeah, it's name your own price, and you can get like an art book for $5 if you know, cool. if you five or more dollars or something, you get all these sketches and little notes. I believe it's Brianna Lee who is the person who developed it, and it's one of those things where this is clearly a piece of like personal work that is also just so charming and funny.
I swear to Christ, I just thought you said queerly. This is queerly a piece of personal work.
Queerly a personal work that I love. It's really wonderful, and it is definitely cheering me up a little bit today. I mean, I started playing it when I was on vacation. Right. As usual, half of the games that I play, my girlfriend has found them from some corner of the internet and is loving it and sort of brings something to me, which is, you know, it's nice to have a girlfriend like that, let me tell you. But also playing it a bit more today, and it's really cheering me up, and I think it's a really nice little gem of a visual novel.
It seems rad. Let me know how long it is when you're done, because like that's one of those things where it's like, oh, if it's a few hours, I'll see if I can like find an evening where I can just like dedicate to playing through something like this, because it would definitely be a nice change of pace and a nice like relaxing fun experience.
I think it's about an hour per character's storyline, okay, which is perfect. Cool. And there's four main routes. Characters, so yeah.
Rad. Yeah. Awesome. Rob, you're also doing a sportsy thing. You played a sportsy thing this weekend. Cars are sportsy, right?
Yes, that's definitely...
Actually, wait, can we get a ruling on that from our sports?
It's a motorsport.
It is a motorsport.
Well, it's specifically called Forza, motorsport.
Though. Like, yeah. Okay, so... I actually was playing two racing games this weekend.
Okay. Was that you? Wait, Rob, did you just bring your hands together and like do the two motorsports and move it like...
Wait, was I audibly rubbing my hands together?
You were audibly rubbing your hands together thinking about cars.
Yes, that actually happened. Now, let me go to my waveforms. Yes, that is hand rubbing at the start of this. So anyway, our producer will clean that up, I'm sure.
Oh, of course.
Fix and post.
Anyway.
Leave that in.
Yeah.
Turn it up.
Yep. Enhance.
So, the way I put it.
That's the new Blade Runner. The new Blade Runner, instead of doing that with visuals, he does it with a waveform, and he's like, it sounds like, this is my Ryan Gosling impression, it sounds like hand rubbing. And then he zooms in, and then he's just like an attractive white dude. That's it. That's my Ryan Gosling impression. Yeah. Tell me about Cars.
Okay, so Cars are sometimes sports and sometimes not.
Okay.
I would say Forza 7 is sort of motorsportsy, but, like, it's not really about, like, racing series. It's a car collection game, and it's a damn good one of those.
So it's like Pokemon, but cars.
Yeah, with maybe slightly more questionable collectability decisions about the way that is all designed. Forza 7... is very much taking a page from like where Battlefield has ended up and a lot of games now with the loot box system.
Oh, and interesting.
So,
okay.
If you're familiar, like, so Forza has always been like Gran Turismo, where you start with lower tiered races, lower tiered series. You get you compete in them, you win money, you win the ability to compete in higher level stuff, and then you go and you like add cars to your collection, you buy components for them and all that shit. And Forza has largely sort of followed that system. And so it's all based on like space bucks and lives in this awesome fantasy world where if you can afford the down payment on a Mazda Miata, eventually, like in 3 or 4 months, you'll be driving a Ferrari around Circuit des Arts.
Right.
Now, in addition to that, there's like a second progression system called your collector's rating. And there's a lot of cars that you can only access if you're like a good enough collector. Which, by the way, is a pretty accurate. Yeah. So tier one, there's a lot of cars, but like it's not the most prestigious cars.
How do you become a better collector or a higher ranked
collector?
By collecting
more cars.
Oh.
So. which, by the way, if this sounds crazy, this is, as a matter of fact, exactly how Ferrari operates.
Wait, really? Does Ferrari not sell unless you have a
Ferrari? Ferrari will
cars
not
already?
Sell you certain types of car unless you are sort of a known Ferrari collector.
What?
It's, yeah, no, for real. Like, Ferrari has like lifetime customers who get like first dibs on the new Ferraris.
Right.
And some of their like more advanced models are just not widely available. And so they extend the offer to like proven collectors.
So if I was a billionaire, tomorrow I won the lottery, and I was like, yo, Ferrari, hook me up with that Enzo. They would be like, no, Austin, you don't have
there's a
the
decent
Ferrari
chance
points
like,
that you need
wow.
to do this.
There's a decent chance they'd turn you down. At least that's how that's how it's always historically been. Like, for instance, there was a, God, I think it was like, might have been a 450 or something like that. But, like, Top Gear had to borrow the Ferrari to test from, Pink Floyd's drummer, I think, was a really well-known Ferrari
Weird.
Collector. So they had to borrow the car. Top Gear had to go to him and be like, yo, can we drive this car around the track? And he was like, cool, yeah, take it. And that's how they were able to access it. Anyway, point is, so Forza roughly follows the system. And in addition to that, you can sort of get, they'll sort of pull back the velvet rope, as it were. They'll sort of like let you in the club. Via boxes that unlock from time to time. Now, if you have like the special edition pre-order thing, you get certain VIP loot boxes to start out.
I've heard that. I saw some headlines this morning that they were altering how that works somehow. I don't know the specifics, but
there's been a lot of public backlash, and Kyle Orland at Ars Technica wrote a pretty decent breakdown of why.
I actually think that was Sam Makovich. I believe he actually wrote that article.
Okay. I just like tweeted through Kyle. Yeah. So I broke my own rule. I didn't look at the byline.
Damn.
Exposed. I am what I hate. But yeah, so they sort of break down the issues with the way the system and why there's sort of a backlash. Jeff Gerstmann's also been tweeting about how much he hates it. I don't find it super objectionable because you can sort of tune it out, but it is kind of interesting that, like, you know, from time to time, a really good car will drop by the secondary collection mechanic, and then that will like progress you toward the next tier of collectability and open up more competitive cars. And I definitely had one car that was like, it was technically qualified for a certain racing series, but it was clearly like the best car. I was competing in like the intro tier classic American muscle series. It's all Mustangs and Camaros.
Right.
And via my VIP bonus, I got some sort of like tricked out like classic Camaro with, I don't know, a turbocharger the size of the Statue of Liberty sticking out the hood.
Listen, man, the haves and the haves nots. You know, like, that's just, if you roll into with what you got, there's no rules on what type of car you can use in a race. If you have a good car, you get to use that car. That's just how it works.
That's definitely how racing works.
I've seen Talladega Nights, like.
Yeah. No, go for it.
That's it. That's all. I've seen Talladega Nights. Oh, she laughed. She laughed at the notion that I would watch Talladega Nights, I think.
I laughed a little imagining you with some popcorn, just sort of, you know,
I actually have a story for Talladega Nights, which is that my college friend Ron got a PS3, I want to say, and it came with a Blu-ray copy of Talladega Nights.
Oh, I remember that.
Really shows off the form.
He hated that. Oh, shout out to Ron if he's listening. He hated that movie, but me and my friend Sean were like, we're going to make you watch it anyway because you got it. And so we sat with beer and Talladega Nights, and we watched that movie. We were – college is bad. You do bad things at college, like make your friends. Go to college if you can, you know, go to college or, you know, or pursue a technical career or whatever. Go for it. Do whatever you want to do. But don't make your friends watch movies they don't want to watch. Unless it's Talladega Nights.
Ron definitely thought about that night when he's like looked at his student loan.
Oh, yeah.
Balance totally. And been like, how much did I like in effect pay to watch that movie with those assholes?
You know what else he probably...
probably like $500 or $600.
You know what else he probably paid or looked at a lot? Was his PS3, because at launch, there was not much for that PS3 except to watch Talladega Nights on Blu-ray.
Lord.
Anyway.
One, Step Brothers is the better Talladega Nights. Two.
True.
Here's a good thing if you want to fuck with people. It's kind of mean. I used to do this to my friend, and if you got someone, like, they got their Netflix queue up and like they walk away for like a minute, just like pick something, play it for a second, and then back out, and then just do that for a bunch of stuff that they wouldn't like, because then it screws up their recommendation.
You're brutal.
Like for a while. And I used to do this to Billy Berghammer. Shout out, Woohoo, Bird Hammer! I would go to his place. He brought this. I'm thinking this because he brought it up at PAX this weekend. He's like, "Hey, remember when you come over to place to watch football, and then we put on Netflix, and then you script my Netflix queue?" And I'd be like, "Yeah, it's a good memory. Thanks for bringing it up. I don't know if you're trying to think that just because I'm a dad, I don't think that's funny anymore. I think it's funnier now."
God,
it's unethical, Patrick.
Why are you like this? Why are you?
Unethical.
Why are you
anyway? Like also, this? Anyway, also, if you want to get your friends list down on Facebook, defriend people on their birthday.
Jesus, what? What happened to Patrick Klepek? He used to be a good dad.
This is who he's always been.
Hey, if you don't have the will to tell someone happy birthday, there's probably not someone that you have a deep connection with anymore. There's actually a rationale behind it. There's a rationale behind it.
I'm waiting for it. So, where is the rationale? No? Okay.
Anyway, the cars. The cars won't reject you.
Oh, look at that they will
hey,
if,
Rob,
you know, if you're not
hey,
high
Rob,
enough
when's...
collector level.
When's your birthday, Rob?
Oh, no.
I'm not telling you this, Patrick. I'm not going down this road. So, yeah, actually, the cars will reject you, though. That's true. If you yeah. If you don't have the collector's tier, they'll be like, sorry, man, your credits aren't green.
Man.
So, but beyond that, though, like you if you ignore that stuff, it's a pretty excellent and enjoyable racing game and feels really good with a controller. It looks just utterly tremendous. The amount of detail is pretty absurd. I was driving a night race at Daytona, and it was every time, because they have like, you know, they have basically street lights lighting the whole racetrack, and as you go under them, the recurring reflection off the windshield was like briefly blinding me. My windshield kind of kept flickering in a way that was like utterly convincing, but also was like making it hard to see and really made it a white knuckle race. Because you'd be like wheel to wheel, like going through a corner, and for like regularly, for like a split second, you just couldn't see.
Right.
And it was
terrifying.
Super intense.
God. Ugh. Well, how was that game otherwise, besides the blind boxes and the collector's rules and the other bullshit? And it's, the blinding nights and the bad rain?
It's good ass Forza.
Okay.
With great racing, great graphics. The way it is, so 4K is where my computer kind of gave up the ghost.
Right, you mentioned that last week on Friday. Yeah.
But I noticed now it's really clever about you can have dynamic like graphic settings, so it will be sort of adjusting the settings mid race maintain frame rate. And I can't see what it's doing because, like, obviously I'm just sort of staring straight ahead, right? Like, I'm, like, laser-focused on tail lights and, like, corner markers. So, like, you know, the game renders those fantastically. But my roommate and my girlfriend were sort of watching over my shoulder, and they were noticing that, like, when there's a lot of traffic on the screen, my dashboard detail would, like, subtly, like, lower. Not enough that you'd, like, catch it out of the corner of your eye, but, like, it would lose resolution. On your windshield, the raindrops are like super convincingly rendered. They move like exactly the way they should with like the inertia of the car and the force of the wind. But at the corner of your eye, like where the raindrops are on the driver's side window, they're actually just kind of gray streaks, and they don't really have that same dynamic. They have no physics, and that's actually really clever. It's like Forza is always sort of making sure that what's in your eye line is going to be rendered as good as it possibly can
be
rendered.
Right.
And then the other stuff is kind of subtly dropped, and it looks fantastic, and you don't notice the corners it's cutting very well. So it's really clever.
Awesome. I will probably not find the time for Forza myself. I don't know. They're going to send around those Xbox One Xs, and I'm like going to need to play something on that isn't Minecraft, right? So Forza seems like it's going to be...
Ringing endorsement for the Xbox One X. Also, man, what the fuck is that machine doing?
That's what I'm trying to figure out.
What is it doing?
There's no games. Like
that's what that is the thing I'm trying to say, Patrick.
But there's Xbox games.
Right, yeah, that's great, but like...
I know, but like, why...
In 4K.
What are they doing?
Or upscale 4K.
They've had years to get ready for this. This is how it rolls out?
There's just nothing. There's just nothing for it to be like, this is the reason why I'm here, right? Like, State of Decay 2 isn't coming out with it. Crackdown 3 isn't coming out with it. I guess just it's Forza.
Ultra high definition Blu-ray.
Oh, maybe I'll
you could watch Talladega Nights.
Yeah, exactly.
God,
I'm super excited for that. I'm like I hooked up this TV and I was like, you know what I'm really gonna need is an Xbox One X.
Is Super Lucky's Tale coming out in 4K? Like, what am I here for?
That is coming out this year. Oh, that does look pretty good, actually.
Okay, well, that's this year. Okay. Do you think that they feel bad? Did they name that fox after Palmer Lucky?
Oh my god!
Wow!
Because it was a VR game for the Oculus. I don't know if you remember that.
It was an exclusive.
It was an exclusive. Yeah. It's not anymore. Clearly. And I just want to know if there's somewhere every day someone at that studio is like, that motherfucker, I can't believe we named our fox Lucky. I'm glad we didn't name it Palmer, because that would be
Palmer,
undeniable.
I'm looking this up.
Xbox One X Palmer. Games question mark is what I'm typing into Google over here. Here we go.
Let's
Xbox
see,
One.
See what the Google results are. Probably a 4chan.
Probably a 4chan. Yep, exactly. Fuck off. Also, yeah, briefly, can I just pause and just drag Google for like a half a second?
Please do.
This morning, if you search for information about the shooting in Las Vegas, two of the results that you could get, this is if you did a private browser, like this is not like your, it's not based on what your previous results even were, could be two different 4chan poll, the politics thread that's on 4chan or board on 4chan threads. And that's bad. Like, those were threads in which, like, lots of misinformation was being spread around intentionally. That board has always been, like, a really shitty place. It's a board that lots of other people on 4chan don't even like because of it being a nesting ground for the worst sorts of far-right and white supremacist politics. And the Google was just like foregrounding those. It's like, oh, here's the top hits for you, bud. Like, oh, you're curious what happened?
The top hits, like the boxes, right?
The boxes, not at the top of a natural SEO selected. No, the carousel of like, here is where you go for news. And the thing that fucks me up about this is like, the people who go that far are the people who are like not satisfied with what's in their Twitter or Facebook feeds, where they're like, you know what, I'm gonna be a good citizen. I'm gonna go take the second step. I'm gonna do a search. I'm gonna go to Google and see if I can find my own good, true information. Nope. Can't, apparently, because what you're going to instead do is wander into a politics thread in which someone is like spreading shitty racist memes or just literally just complete falsehoods.
Well, and I thought that carousel was like Google had to add those, like sites had to be eligible to be included in those carousels. I didn't think this aspect was algorithmic.
Like, it is absolutely algorithmic in some regard. Google has since addressed this and has pulled them out, but I don't. This isn't like a person. People don't. I don't know if the individual sites have to be like checklisted or whatever, or like hand chosen, but the individual results certainly do not. They have since pulled these out of there, but like, y'all know what 4chan is. Like, you know what the Paul thread is. Like, this is, or if you don't, then like, y'all should get on Google and look some shit up. You do better. Like, just do better at this, especially this year, especially coming off of an election that everyone has spoken to at length about what the effect of you know, quote unquote fake news and other misinformation led to. Like, this isn't new. Like, it's such a disappointing thing. Not that I like have ever been particularly like in love with a lot of Google's larger policies, but like, fuck, man.
Remember when they were remember when it was "Don't be evil"? Remember when that was their friggin' like,
yeah. Well,
motto? Even that was always,
yes,
like that was always kind of a bullshit. Like, what does that mean? Like, that is a way to sound like that is a gesture toward virtue that is so vague that it actually doesn't compel you to take any action. And hell, you know, if you're not the one committing the evil, if it's just being algorithmically generated and selected,
well, we're just showing you the evil. You really that's fine. Yeah,
like. This is why you got Facebook basically being like, look, man, I'm as stunned as you that you can target Jew haters with their advertising program.
Yeah. Yep.
The robot wants what it wants, and apparently what it wants is, anti-Semitism, discrimination.
Yeah. Right. Yeah, that's all. It just wants clicks, man. It wants all the clicks. It doesn't judge.
We can't control it.
It just wants traffic.
Way.
Xbox One X games coming out this year. I guess the thing is, like, a lot of fall games will be theoretically enhanced by it, right? Like, Shadow of War will probably look better on an Xbox One X than on a PS4 Pro, theoretically, right?
Yeah, but that's a game that's also coming out on PC.
Yeah, that's so,
like,
true.
Part of the reason that the PS4 Pro, like, made a semi-compelling case for, like, games like Horizon and stuff like that was, like,
Uncharted.
It doesn't exist on PC, and so when you see the footage, like, when you see, like, footage of Shadow War running on Xbox One X, I mean, it's impressive, but it's also, like, it loses something because it's not exclusive to that platform.
Right, right. I mean, that's the thing, is, like, at this point, though, this is the thing that's weird about the Xbox One X, is that it runs contrary to this other big push that, or maybe not contrary, but, like, it runs into it, at the very least. Maybe it doesn't intersect it cleanly, but, like, there's definitely some rubbing and bouncing here, which is the other big Xbox push has been, get your Xbox games.
What?
Rubbing is racing, okay? Rubbing is racing.
Oh, there it is.
Okay.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number Smart Beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 50% on the Sleep Number Limited Edition smart bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at a Sleep Number store or sleepnumber.com.
And
rubbing and bouncing.
The other thing the Xbox has been pushing lately, Microsoft has been pushing, has been, like, play your Xbox games on your PC. Like, Forza, that Forza code that came in for Rob was an Xbox One code. He doesn't have an Xbox One, but he can play it cleanly on his PC through the Xbox Store or whatever. I just need everyone to know that when I said rubbing is racing, something broke in my chair, and it slowly started lowering me further and further down.
Your chair knew what you said, Austin.
My chair was like, no, Austin,
your chair knew.
Take a seat, sir.
Sounds like the internet police. A sexy internet cop is going to have to show up and give Austin a piece of her mind. But wait, it's a stripper. Arranged by the rest of the Waypoint team.
Wow, this took a turn. I don't know how we got here. Xbox One X coming soon.
I want this story to continue. I really want to know.
I game journal Days of Thunder. That's what
right.
I want.
Okay.
It's like, okay. Austin, you got tons of promise, but you just drive too angry.
I'm
game
that's,
too angry.
That's game angry, the Austin Walker story.
There's got to be, like, a walk angry in there. You got to get some extra walk.
Yeah, right. Walk angry. You know? That's it. All right, I think I think we should go to the question bucket and then try to wrap this fucking weird podcast up. This one does come in. If you have questions, you can send it to gamingadvice.com. I'll use the subject question. I won't see it until I get to email tech support and get them to add me back to this list. But
that sounds easy. I bet that's I bet it'll be fixed real quick for you.
This comes in from Rosa from Sweden. Shout outs to tech support who listened to this podcast. First of all, thank you.
We're just throwing shade advice in general.
Just general, right. That's not a specific. Rosa from Sweden says, hey, Waypointers, have we decided that that's what we're calling you now? If you could choose an album that would inspire a game, which would you choose? You can interpret it however you want, if it's thematically or the narrative of the album. Like, how would a game look if the team was immensely inspired by a Radiohead album or the last Kendrick album? Rosa from Sweden. What's the album that you would have turned into a game?
Version 2.0 by Garbage.
What would that game look like?
1998. It's beautiful. It would look like a beautiful 1998 game. So, of course, it's a 3D platformer with immersive sim elements. And
okay.
It would be vaguely experimental. It would be very much in the, like, alternative vein of the late 90s. But it would have little bits of experimental, kind of stuff thrown in. It would have some different mechanics. It would have some all sorts of stuff. Also, it would be starring Shirley Manson, the front woman of Garbage.
Of course.
There you go. My answer.
Okay, that's a good answer. That was a quick answer. It's like you'd thought about this already. Like, maybe you'd been thinking about this since the late 90s even.
Yep. You know, it's my dream game, so.
Robin Patrick,
I think of one of my favorite albums of all time is Sigur Rós's Untitled, or Parentheses album, as it's sometimes called. I imagine sort of like a slower-paced Rez like Ooh. Something that's like a, yeah. it's a little more melancholy and thoughtful. Thoughtful is the wrong word. Just slower.
Yeah.
Like Rez is like extremely fast paced, like extremely quick, like a twitch based action game. Like I'd love something that had some sort of like interactive mechanic that has you interfacing with the world, but something that was like abstract in the way that like Sigur Rós is like musical aesthetic suggests abstraction, but not in the like trance direction, which is that's part of my problem with Rez is just like I bounce off the music in a way that like makes it hard for me to engage with it in the way that lots of other people do.
Right.
But like
right.
Sigur Rós is like way more like
your
pace
speed.
And,
yeah.
And I would love something those are like atmospheric, controlled, and interactive in a Rez like way that was inspired by. It, you know, take your pick, Untitled or Aegis Byrne, however you pronounce that goddamn album that I might have known how to pronounce in high
At
school.
At some point.
I don't know how to pronounce.
Yep.
Somehow lost it. But so just, I guess sort of Sigur Rós in general, I think, would make like a really cool sort of aesthetic inspiration.
Cool. Rob, what about you?
Oh, man. An August and Everything After Farming Sim. No. I think... Gosh, there's so many albums I would do this for. I would love a Darkness style or Deus Ex One style, sort of immersive sim shooter themed around Born to Run.
Oh, that'd be great.
For instance, I would like just you're fucking going around 1970s, 80s, New York and New Jersey, and like different zones have different moods. Like you know, later in the game, it's starting to turn a little more into Meeting Across the River.
Uh-huh.
Oh hell yeah, I'd just be all about
that. Home. Sounds good. I would, as a Jersey boy, let me tell you, that's like, have I told you the story that like the thing I? Okay, I don't know what your holiday traditions are, but in my house, in my house, goddamn, what we do is we put on Born to Run. When we open gifts in New Jersey, it's 100%.
Oh my god!
It's because I bought.
Is this a bit?
It's not a bit. I bought my dad, or I bought my stepdad once a Springsteen like box set collection because he's a big Springsteen fan, and so we put that on, and then that like became just like the thing we did every year for a decade. So that no matter what, like, Born to Run is a Christmas album for me. Also, it's always been a Christmas album to some degree, like ever since I left for college, because like that's an album about your feelings about home and leaving home, and so so Christmas is always like, I'm gonna go home, and then I want to get the fuck out of here because.
What's the lyric that sticks the most with you off that album? Like what's the turn of phrase that like haunts you?
It's probably something from Thunder Road, which is like the song I listen to once a week at least. I don't know. I am hard pressed to pick a single lyric. Let me pitch my game because it's important to me. All right. So you know I love a game called Invisible Ink, in which it's like a cyberpunk thing where you have like there's two layers. There's like the you're sneaking around layer, and then there's like you're the hacking layer. A Gunpoint does something similar. I like games that have those like double layer of just like here is the regular world, and here is like the interface, the overlay. I want a Outcast Speaker Box Love Below where the main world is Speaker Box and then the hacking layer is Love Below. And it's like an Afrofuturistic, like it looks like the Black Panther trailer from the new Black Panther movie. And it is like on the regular level, it's just like Afrofuturism, like superhero secret agents breaking into places. And then you can switch down to the Love Below where you have like hell powers that are granted to you by Andre 3000, who is the Love Below. But he's like Satan. But what if Satan had love powers instead of being a shitty person? And it like little things like come instead of going like above the world map, you get a mirrored under version of the world map. And you know, you get to do all the stuff that you know you do in Invisible Ink, except now it has this like completely different flavor. And maybe instead of like taking out mega corporations, you're taking out like white supremacists, which are just different mega corporations. So you know, it works out. It's pretty similar. That's my pitch.
That's really good.
Someone make all of these games, please. Thank you. You know, if we ever do an official Waypoint game jam, those are the ideas.
There you go.
Good luck
licensing
all of that music. I think that's going to do it for us. All the other questions are pretty long ones. So otherwise, I would dig into another one.
Those are good meaty responses, though. I feel like we really...
Yeah,
you know,
we did all right
this time.
Sometimes
it's good to do one question that everybody has a good-ass answer like that. So, yeah.
Agreed.
And we're going to have to do it that way because Austin has cut himself off from the ability to receive more questions.
I did. So,
we're basically we've just kind of like husbanded this precious resource that is listener mail.
Don't worry, we have 1,000 fucking questions in this question inbox that we haven't gotten to yet. So
I'm still getting them, so it's all right.
That's good. You know. That's good. I'm gonna email tech support once we hang up. I'm Austin Walker. You can find me on Twitter at Austin_Walker. You can find everything we do at waypoint.vice.com, twitter.com/waypoint, facebook.com/waypointvice, and youtube.com/waypointvice. Where can people find you, Patrick?
One, you can find me at Patrick Klobuck. Two, we'll talk about this later on Friday because we just kind of ran out of time, but I briefly, I've played like 5 or 6 hours of the worst titled name, worst name of a game in 2017, Battle Chasers Night War,
yeah.
Which is a new game from several of the members that worked on Darksiders. They made sort of a JRPG inspired dungeon RPG game that is stylish but maybe lacking in substance, but we'll get into that more on
the one
Friday.
Thing I want to say about it before we leave is just like I wish that it had the charm that Golf Story does, and that Golf Story had the look and like the frenetic energy, the incredible animation.
It is an incredible, like, every battle, even when they're like just sort of boring, rote, like the game should automatically allow me to get through this without actually fighting this battle sort of fight. It is just, in a year in which like you can praise so many games for their looks and gameplay and all sorts of things, like even their Battle Chasers like stands out as just like an unbelievably good looking game. So I'm gonna play a lot more of it.
Yeah, let's talk about it on Friday. I'll try to put some.
I have a real soft spot for the Darksiders team and the stuff they've worked on. So I'm gonna play more of that. But more of that. I'm also gonna play A Hat in Time this week. Hopefully you'll find a way to boot up a PC so you can check that.
Yes,
out too.
I have a gaming PC at my desk now at work. So I'm very excited to try that out as well.
Danielle, where can people find you on the internet?
I'm at DanielleRI on Twitter.
And Rob Zachney.
I'm at Rob Zachney on Twitter, where I often just take a moment to express my appreciation and respect for Vice IT. Shout out to Wes, and just keep moving my tickets to the top of the stack, boys and girls.
Wow.
Unlike some people,
you can find Rob's alt at Vice Brown Noser. His AD account. You can find information about Bowen, who lets us use his track Miss You off the EP Pale Machine over at waypoint.zone/BOEN. And just one more time, I want to shout out the forums and our incredible mods over at the forums, and also our mods on our channel Discourse, on our Waypoint channel Discourse. You can find the forums at discourse.zone or at forms.waypoint.vice.com. Nope, form.waypoint.vice.com. That's why I just say discourse.zone instead. The people there have been incredible. There's really rad stuff happening on the forums. The conversation is really positive. They're really well moderated. So if you need a place on the internet that is like, hey, I want to go hang out with people on a shitty day, like, those places are I'm thankful to say, like, places that you should be able to feel comfortable doing that. Also, shout outs to our incredible Destiny clans, which I knew that there was one. I knew that we had Friends at the Tower, which is a great name. I recently found out that we also have Owls in the Barn, which is a fantastic reference to Patrick and my first Destiny 2 stream. And then also now Popplio Pals, which is going to be the PC stream. So shout outs to Popplio Pals, Owls in the Barn, and Friends at the Tower. Everybody who's repping Waypoint out there is making us proud. So thank you, everybody. I hope that today, gets better overall, but also just in your personal lives, I hope that you found some degree of respite from all this bullshit. And if you feel affected, if you feel like you need to take some time, please do that. And we'll be here tomorrow. We're gonna all keep hustling and doing our best to keep giving you stuff to, not just be distracted with, but hopefully be a little more engaged. So until then, I think that's gonna do it for us. What do we say to him, Daniel?
Be good and be good at it.
Peace.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here, and it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.